Welcome to another episode of PSD Spotlight. You might notice a new voice is hosting this episode, and that's because this will be a marketing-specific episode. I'm your host, Sarah Spiva, and I'm the Director of Communications for Tech San Diego. I'm responsible for our marketing strategy in addition to 14 other things, and I wanted to have a conversation with our friend Alan at Ignite Visibility about the changing digital marketing landscape. Ignite Visibility is a premier online marketing agency with a mission singularly focused on providing the highest level of customer service in the industry. By establishing mutually beneficial long-term relationships with clients, Ignite creates custom solutions uniquely tailored to meet the specialized business objectives of each client. With me in the virtual studio today is Alan Bush, VP of Strategy and SEO Expert. Welcome, Alan.
Hey, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. Ready to talk about the internet as it unfolds now.
Right? It's sort of, it feels like it's collapsing, but maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah, right.
So with the takeover of Twitter by Elon Musk, some of its users immediately took to the app to say their goodbyes and deactivate their accounts. But what does that really mean for brands? Is Twitter still a viable pillar of digital marketing strategy? 82% of B2B content marketers use Twitter, and the only other platform with higher usage is LinkedIn at 96%. For those people who have been living under a rock, Twitter was founded in 2006 in San Francisco by Jack Dorsey, who left his position in 2015, paving the way for Elon Musk to buy Twitter for $44 billion. Twitter is the 15th most popular social network. An interesting fact is that 10% of Twitter users are responsible for 92% of tweets. So most people who use Twitter use it to get news, entertainment, keep in contact with friends and family, and follow brands and companies. A small portion of them use it to strengthen their professional network and other reasons. And it has 396.5 million users globally. U.S. adults spend an average of 6 minutes per day on Twitter, with the largest age group being 25 to 34-year-olds. It's mostly male-dominated, making up 70.4% of the user base. And the argument for brands to use Twitter for marketing is because people are spending 26% more time viewing ads on Twitter than on any other social media platform. Twitter has experienced a 35% year-over-year increase in global ad engagement. Brands that spend more on Twitter are seen as more culturally relevant. It's the number one platform for brand interaction. Twitter drives 40% greater ROI than other social channels. Brands are 2.3 times more likely to reach KPIs if marketing launches on Twitter. So where are people going? And that is a place called Mastodon. At the moment, Mastodon calls itself a decentralized social network. And what does that mean? It's, according to its official App Store description, the site consists of different communities and is built with a focus on privacy and safety, letting users decide who they want to share their posts with and providing content warnings. It also has an ad-free chronological timeline, custom emojis, and a 500-character limit. According to Gizmodo, there are already approximately 5.8 million accounts on Mastodon and counting, and it's not owned by any one company, allowing the communities to be truly user-led. What's more, Mastodon is one of many platforms in what's called the Fediverse, a network of apps with different purposes that share the same protocol, meaning joining Mastodon could open the door to a whole internet world. So, Alan, do you buy the hype of brands leaving Twitter? Before Musk's takeover, the company reported making 90% of its revenue from advertisers. And now that they're going to be charging a subscription fee for that blue check, it's unclear whether this could make up for lost revenue from ads. There are seven now companies who have announced that they are leaving. About 15 minutes ago was the seventh company just announced. But the other brands are Audi, General Mills, General Motors, Mondelez International, the company of Oreos, Pfizer, Volkswagen, and Unilever is that seventh company.
I feel like a lot of people are going to follow suit, because what's happened is that the owner, the current owner, didn't really do the due diligence to figure out what's the issue there. And I feel like brands and people in general use Twitter as an outreach tool more so, even though the advertising is really huge on there. The people that are on there are really utilizing it to connect with people that they don't know. I always tell my students this, is that like Twitter is a great way to reach people that you might not have access to ordinarily and have direct conversation with celebrities and brands, as you mentioned. But the way people are going now is that if you just drop a bomb on them to say, okay, now you have to pay a fee when you didn't all the entire years of Twitter, without consulting maybe a group of people that are currently using it, maybe some of the people that were talking to these brands, hey, would you pay a fee or would this be worth it for you if we gave you some added incentives? Brands will start bailing out and looking for alternatives. And I this kind of doesn't bode well for Twitter.
Right.
I mean, so many people are jumping ship now because of the controversy surrounding the owner. And he's a public figure, and I have nothing against him personally, but from what I'm hearing, there's so many issues going on with his personal brand, which is now becoming Twitter. And it's right. Almost like better to have someone that's in the ghost shadows. You know, you don't hear a lot about Sergey Brin from Google. And right. You don't hear a lot about, but you do hear a lot about the owner of Meta. So
right.
when your owner is surrounded in controversy, they either love you or they hate you. And if they hate you, they're going to leave.
Right. I mean, and Meta has its own issues, you know, with its recent layoff announcement.
Right. So I feel like people look, and I'm even personally, because I love Twitter for the purpose of outreach. I've gotten a lot of contacts through Twitter when I had my own podcast. That was our primary outreach tool, and we've talked to owners of businesses just by simply reaching out on Twitter. But yeah. Now it's like, what's the comparable solution? And Mastodon seems to be on the top of the list, even though it's more like private sector servers and that type of thing. But it seems to be that's the one that people are gravitating to. There's a few others out there, but I think that's the one that has the most promise.
Have you bounced around there a little bit? Because I spent some time there yesterday and it was really interesting. There's definitely a slightly similar user interface with Mastodon once you get in to one of the servers, and there's a general channel, and then you can find like more specific ones. But it does have a similar structure for users as Twitter, where it's kind of like that box where you can type your thoughts with the emojis and yeah. Everything
and outreach to people. And one of the things about it, I believe it's more local specific, and then you go to the general chats.
Yeah.
I don't think it has as broad a reach as Twitter per se in terms of like the amount of users, but there is a learning curve, but
right,
I do see it's almost like Reddit and Twitter merged in some
right.
kind of weird way.
That was sort of the vibe that I was getting. Yes.
Did you? Yeah. Yeah. I had the same feeling, because it's like you have these kind of sub servers that you could be a part of, but then there's a general one that you could tune into depending on who you're following, etc. So I do see a lot of promise there. I have poked around myself. I like it. You know, I haven't really found a major use for it, because believe it or not, even as an internet marketing specialist, I don't do a lot of social media. I'm kind of a strangely private guy, considering that I teach classes at the university here. But that being said, I want to stay on top of these things. So I'm joining some of these other alternative places. And Mastodon seems to be the one where people are probably have the best interaction, because it already has a following.
Right.
It's not like a brand new service. It's been out there for a little while. I don't know how many years it's been out there, but I do see it. People are kind of leaning towards that. And even from the buzz that I hear from colleagues and friends of mine, they're like, yeah, they're even kind of Mastodon's on their lips, so to speak. See that being an alternative place. As a matter of fact, if you're a company, you may want to dive into the top three alternatives. I think Reddit is another one.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, and that's been around forever, but it's more of a discussion forum.
Right.
Even though Twitter could be more of a listening tool, whereas Reddit is definitely a discussion tool.
I mean, I kind of lurk on Reddit more than participate in posts. But there is definitely, like, if you're in the tech industry, there's so many different conversations happening, sub-conversations that are happening underneath that very large topic. And I think there's, you know, Twitter was supposed to be sort of this organic reach marketing tool. Even though the paid ads was the bulk of their profit margin, I still think that there is something to be said for using Reddit in an organic way to talk about different products.
You can't sell on Reddit. You have to have a discussion. I had a situation where I had a private website that I was just going to do some testing with, and someone shared an image from my website on Reddit, and I had a huge spike in traffic.
Oh, see?
That day.
Yeah.
So there's benefits to having a discussion and being part of a major forum and having, like you said, organic reach. But you can't oversell yourself. Like if you sell coffee, you got to talk about, you know, what you did that day and how coffee helped you. You can't be like,
right. You can't be obviously selling. You have to be talking about it. And it has to be, it definitely has to organically come up in the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So should companies pivot to LinkedIn? 96% of them are already using LinkedIn, but should there be more? There's this rise of the LinkedIn influencer, and can they be, they're sort of seem to be, you know, disingenuous, a lot of them. Could there be a shift for companies to be using LinkedIn more heavily?
Yeah. If we're talking about paid advertising, then LinkedIn's probably going to rise a lot. Yeah. I've always been a huge advocate of LinkedIn as a professional.
Yeah.
And I personally, it's probably my best social network to network and discuss things and listen to people that are actually within my frame of mind, so to speak.
If you're not looking to share, you know, like pictures of your kids or get into some silly Facebook political discussion, you definitely want to, and you know, generally people seem to follow the rules of general society on LinkedIn still. So
yeah, and it doesn't mean you can't share, and you just read my mind. It's like, it doesn't mean you can't share personal information. Like I know people have shared personal information, but as it pertains to how they use their professional life and business right. life, that kind of work-life balance discussion, generally speaking. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of spammers out there, but LinkedIn is becoming a little more saturated with people trying to get your attention and want your services. So there's that.
Oh gosh, but, yes.
You know, I'm sure you get it too.
Direct messages all day long.
Yeah, yeah. I get people trying to sell me SEO. I'm like, what are you doing?
What are you talking about?
Did you do your due diligence? Who I am?
Yeah.
I really think companies definitely should be on LinkedIn, and organically and paid, it's going to have a huge spike due to the thing that's going on with Twitter for sure. And because it's so business centric, B2B especially, would have a better return on LinkedIn. I feel than what's happening on these other social networks.
Right. Right. And so the other platforms, I guess, there are some businesses that are, you know, direct to consumer they're on TikTok. Does B2B belong on TikTok? My guess is no, but
I agree with you. I'm not a huge TikTok user. However, I've been swayed by certain people that I've spoken with, especially the younger generations, that TikTok does have a lot of community. Mm-hmm. So the brand has to be, yeah, B2B sometimes can be stale, but don't forget, B2B is also talking to people. And if mm-hmm. people can reach other people through certain ways, then if you have a message that strikes to the heart and you could say something that, I don't want to say emotional, but it's not salesy, almost like the Reddit situation. Like you'll benefit if you're able to communicate in TikTok by offering maybe advice or tips and things that you would maybe even do on YouTube. Right. Just smaller bites of, like, take a YouTube video and make it smaller bites, and you could likely get some kind of following at TikTok. But you can't go in there dancing and doing all that stuff. Right.
Right. You can't be doing some of the stuff that the kids are doing. But definitely, I can see where you could turn some of your white pages into small TikToks.
Yes. Yeah. And there are people on there. Again, there are people on there. You have to remember. And so. Yeah. Granted, there is a younger generation on there, but if you're doing B2B, some of these younger generation own businesses.
Yeah.
And so if you talk to them, they may be growing their business and you may have an opportunity to partner with them. And I'm kind of blown away by how people discover certain influencers on TikTok. But I also am blown away by the amount of emotional support on TikTok. Yeah. People tend to go to people's rescue there. And granted, there's a lot of spam bots and people that are just jerks in general. Sure. But I feel like I underestimated the value of people when they do the collaborations and just play each other's music and that type of thing.
That
there's an emotional support group there. And so I feel like you have to be somewhat heart-centric when mm-hmm. you're doing your organic TikTok. Now, there is a big push with advertising there too. So I would say I wouldn't put all the eggs there, but I would at least try to stay on top of what the paid advertising looks like and what the demographics are there. It may not be yours. B2B, again, if you're reaching younger businesses, so to speak, like let's say you were really catering to breweries, right. You know, I bet you you'd get some good traction.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. It's got to be industry specific for sure.
Yeah.
So should more brands be using YouTube?
Oh, yeah. I mean, YouTube, again, there's still kind of it's still there. It's still pervasive in our culture. It's the second largest search engine. And as much as the ads bother me, I'll be watching a video and there's like 10 ads throughout the video and some people don't have any. But you got to be on there. And there is, I think the problem with YouTube is that people really don't do it right. They don't link back to their own websites. They don't provide a certain value. They're just throwing an ad up and people just skip ads. But there's a lot of organic reach within YouTube. There's a company called Dr. Squatch that uh-huh. actually was a former client. So their video, their commercial has like 10 million views organically.
Wow.
And they're a brand. They're just a soap brand. Not to, you know, I'm not trying to give a shout out. This is what happened. So,
right.
But they had a funny commercial that just went viral. I'm not saying you have to do that, but there is a lot to be said for providing value and educational resources to your customers. And YouTube is a place where they go and do searches. A lot of people don't even search in Google. They go to YouTube to look up things.
So what do you think the sweet spot is for like the YouTube video, that length? Should it be like a 7-minute video? Is that too long?
Yeah. So the jury's out on, sometimes long form content tends to rank pretty well in the algorithm mm-hmm. because YouTube's thinking that people are digesting that type of content, but then they're also moving towards the shorts where you have a very similar mm-hmm. to a TikTok experience because they want to be on top of that too. So, I guess it depends on what you want to say. It's like you could use the shorts to introduce certain ideas and then use maybe the end credit to point them to your long form content and you create your own ecosystem, right? Because I think 15 minutes is probably a good spot where people could digest content and it's still long enough where you're getting some value out of it. 10 to 15 minutes, I would say. Now, 7 minutes, again, you know, depends on what you're saying, like what you're aiming to sell. It could be just a 7-minute. People listen to Joe Rogan and he does 3-hour podcasts.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that you have to do that either, but, generally speaking, people have a short break in the day. So yeah, I would say between 7 and 15 minutes would be like a good way to do that. And my advice also is to, if you have a long form, let's say 2-hour long conversation, just break it up in chunks and do a part 2, part 3, part 4, and then have that so that you're kind of spreading your web real estate across YouTube. And that way those keywords and the things that you're discussing will revolve around each other and you're kind of creating your own following. And you're also maximizing yourself. You could put a video out regularly. You don't have to like overwork yourself to try to get another 2-hour one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of success with like series videos, like part 1, part 2, part 3, and sending people back, you know, see the full feature on our website and having it posted as like, you know, when it hits people in the face when they first go to the website. So on the front page,
it's almost like you want to have it in chapters, you know, and your discussions right. is almost like what we're doing. If we were to split this up, we would take, okay, here's what we discussed, Twitter, then here's we're discussing Mastodon, and then we're discussing LinkedIn. So
exactly.
We can even break that up into sections and make that a separate discussion point. And I feel like, you know, if you format your videos that way, you're going to create a really great interaction for the users, and that in turn makes YouTube like you better, puts you at the top of the list of subscription people.
Definitely. So, okay. So here's the thing. TikTok and Reels, are they the same? Was one better than the other? Is one more relevant than the other? I know that the algorithm on Instagram favors Reels. So you get 10,000 views of your Reel just by posting one.
Right. Yeah. Instagram is really, it has to compete with TikTok now. They used to be the ones, only ones doing the video thing. And I guess I wouldn't say the only, but there was Vine back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Vine?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. People are still hoping Vine's coming back because of the new owner.
Yeah. It's like all the people that were on Vine, they miss it because it was such a fun platform for people to create content. And TikTok's kind of steadily become the replacement for that. I feel like Instagram is aiming to be that, and you're going to see a lot of mimicry, whereas Instagram is mimicking a lot of what TikTok's doing. And mm-hmm. and conversely, TikTok is mimicking some of Instagram's features. So right. Lately, they've been adding certain features with pictures. I just saw that TikTok wants to just have pictures. So they're going to try to outbid one another to get the attention. So yeah, definitely Reels and still the regular interaction on Instagram is helpful. And the legacy of Instagram, plus the connection with Meta or Facebook, there's still a benefit to being able to post one place and have it spread to other places. You don't have to work. You work smarter, not harder. But I feel like, B2B, Instagram's still going to be a good solution for people. And like I said, TikTok, I wouldn't say it's all hype. There's a lot to it, but I wouldn't put all the eggs there either, and I wouldn't try to figure out crack the code of being the biggest TikTok influencer. There's a bit of diversity. If you have a person that is a TikTok personality that can endorse you, and they're doing the job for you, great. But with your brand, you got to figure out, okay, well, what is going to be interesting, and what, I may just kind of syndicate to TikTok and post some ads, but spend a little bit more time doing my Instagram posts because more businesses and people that are into my business are there having interactions and discussions.
Right. It's really audience specific for sure.
Yeah.
Going back to Twitter for a second, what would the benefits be for brands paying the $8 for the blue check?
I don't know.
Is there a benefit?
Well, the blue check is really just to say that you're authentically you.
Right.
So if people are mimicking you and saying, hey, I'm...
Which has been happening...
Right, since Twitter's inception.
Right. Well, not only that, but with the, Devin Nunes Cow Twitter account was kind of a funny parody account. There were parody accounts that people were using, but they were differentiated by the fact that Devin Nunes, the person, had a verified check mark next to their name. So you knew that like the cow wasn't him, like being,
You sure you're not a cow, Devin?
Right. Oh yeah. But it's been funny. I kind of like took a step back away from Twitter for a second as well. And then I kind of just was curious like what's happening in there, because it feels like the Wild West. And, yeah. There were accounts pretending to be lots of public figures, and some of them were really funny and some of them were not so funny. And so I just you got to wonder if they're paying for the subscription, they have to go through some sort of verification process, right. Or at least they should have. But
yeah, that was the point of the blue check. They went through some kind of verification process. And I think I'm curious is that if can I verify that I'm Duracell Light?
Right.
As a brand, and I registered that name and then I could just pretend like, can anybody get a blue check?
If they pay
a subscription model. That's what I think is going to happen. The blue check originally was for people that were in the public eye or brands to verify that they're authentically them, so that they're differentiated from like you said, the hack or the parody users. But is this opening up people to go, oh, if I pay $8 a month, I could get a blue check mark and still be this person's brand. And then Twitter runs off with the money.
Right, exactly. So I mean, it's, I guess it still remains to be seen what's going to happen.
People are just backing out. These brands that you mentioned earlier are backing out because they look, they're actually probably in protest.
Right.
It's like, well, I don't want to be a part of this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There were some companies who have never paid for ads on Twitter who were saying, we're never, well, we're not paying for ads on Twitter any either. And so my prediction is that there's probably going to be a few more brands leaving Twitter in the next few months, unless things change drastically. But I don't know what would have to change besides, a swift turnover to a board, like what happened before Elon took over.
Right. Yeah. This is going to be a lot of reputation management, and yep, some new feature is going to come out of Twitter where it's going to be kind of irresistible to leave, because right now it's so saturated with negativity.
Yeah.
That I, unfortunately a lot of brands are going to bail out. I still think it'll be useful for people to connect, and the organic portion of it will probably still purvey for a little while.
Yeah.
Once the certain generations and certain brands start leaving, certain influencers, not even just the brands, but the people that are really making, like you said, the 10% that are doing 90% of the tweeting.
Yeah.
If they start leaving, then Twitter's going to start becoming crickets.
Right, exactly. They can't lose that 10% of their base. And if those people start leaving, they're going to lose a lot of the conversations that were happening that kept people staying in spite of the negativity.
Right, exactly. Because you can find good people to follow and listen to. And I have, I'm on Twitter and I have friends that are on there, and I don't follow a lot of news outlets. I follow a lot of people that I look up to on some level,
right.
Either brands or people. And also people that I might know, and 90% of that is positive and friendly and thought provoking. One thing I will say too is I remember when, not to get too morbid, but when certain celebrities might pass away, Twitter was the first place you'd go to find it.
I go to verify on Twitter almost immediately, because usually that's the first place that people got the information from. That's where I'm hearing it third or fourth or 50th hand.
Exactly. Yeah. So there is some benefit to being kind of a source authenticizing. Is that a word?
Authenticity.
authenticity. We'll use that word to verify certain things that are happening in the news or what discussion topics are going around there. That's why all the hashtags work. And so, Twitter still has a lot of value for people to tune in to something, like almost like old time radio. Like
right.
You tune into that network and people are discussing certain things, and you can tune into the another part of Twitter, and it's a live feed of discussion that's perpetually happening by the second. So
right.
So there is there's very few platforms that are like that, where you're just, there's so much going on discussing what's going on in the world.
Do we see the return of he who shall not be named back to the Twitter feed?
yeah, I bet you, to get some attention and get the followers.
That might be a way to start bringing people back.
There's a benefit to it for them,
right?
To get them on there, and he'll stir up regardless of, like, bad or good. If you're getting press,
no, bad press is bad press.
Yeah, exactly. So essentially, you get people flocking back to that platform to listen to what,
just
bad
to see what sort of unhinged conversations are happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a
car accident. You love or hate them. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. You love it or hate it, you still got to look.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that should probably end our chat for today, but I think that this is a really important conversation to be having, because digital marketing is constantly changing. We really don't know what's going to be happening going into 2023. And it'll be interesting to see where digital marketing strategy will end up going as this giant platform, does whatever it's going to do.
Yeah, as it unhinges and unfurls, is it going to rebound from what's happening now? Or are people going to just jump ship and find a new place to go to? Similarly, how TikTok evolved, and we may be seeing an evolution of Twitter, or the followers there are going to jump to another ship, and that's going to be the new thing in the future. So I think it's going to be a little bit of both right now. So yeah. I think put your feet in the waters of some of these other platforms just to see what's going on there. And you know, if you like it, the platform is better for you to stay there and then and create something out of that. But you know, keep your ears and eyes perked in Twitter. And you know, it's such a old, it's been around for many years, and you know, hopefully they rebound, and you know, hopefully the owner's controversy will not last as long, and we'll start seeing more positivity come out of that network.
Yeah, I mean, is there some benefit for brands not necessarily to deactivate their accounts, but just to step away from them for a while to see just what happens?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right, Alan, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. Where can people find you on social media, or on, are you just on LinkedIn and on Twitter, or?
Yeah, it would be ironic if I was like, I'm all right. On Twitter.
Yep.
I'm on Twitter. I'm not very used. I don't use it a lot for networking. LinkedIn is a huge, I love connecting on LinkedIn. I think that's probably the best place to get a hold of me directly. Also, Ignite Visibility as a company has a presence on LinkedIn or on pretty much all the social media platforms. And for whatever reason, you can always email me directly, Alan, at Ignite Visibility there, ignitevisibility.com. But LinkedIn is one of the best places to network with me directly.
All right. So if people have any other questions, Alan is an SEO expert and teaches SEO strategy at both universities here in San Diego. So if you have questions, he is a great resource. You can email him, like he said, at alan@ignitevisibility.com. And we will add the website address in the show notes for you so you can go and see how Ignite Visibility can help you know, optimize your digital marketing strategy. Thank you so much. This has been an episode of Tech San Diego Spotlight, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. This episode of TSD Spotlight was hosted by Tech San Diego Director of Communications, Sarah Spiva. Major thanks to Alan Bush, VP of Strategy and SEO Professor for USD and UCSD for his time. We will be back next month with another episode. Ignite Visibility offers earned media, paid media, and website development and design services. Named as San Diego Business Journal's number 8 fastest growing company in 2015, learn more how Ignite can help your business at ignitevisibility.com. Since 1994, Tech San Diego has provided a unifying voice for San Diego technology community, fostering growth and business acceleration through collaborations between industry, education, and government. We support members from all sectors of the technology industry, including cybersecurity, big data, robotics, SaaS, biotech, healthcare, Internet of Things, defense, telecom, and more. Learn more about us at www.techsandiego.org. Producers for Tech San Diego Spotlight are Kevin Carroll and Sarah Spiva. TSD Spotlight is recorded remotely and edited by Hypable Impact. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, make sure to like, follow, and share.